It's be Yom Tov Achron, the Yom Tov Achron.
Oh, the Yom Tov Achron.
See, so there, Yom Tov means that it has to be a festival day, not just a Cholamei day. Do you understand?
Yom Tov Achron Shalchach.
Right.
That has to be.
So therefore, that has to be Shmini Atzeres.
It has to be Shmini Atzeres.
But obviously, the question
is. Hashanah Rabbah is not
right.
Chag.
Correct.
That's right. We only work on
that. I mean, technically, it's a day of Cholamei, although, of course, we have all kinds of festivals.
We still only was still
okay.
holding
okay.
on.
Fine, fine. No,
right.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. But, you know, so how does that jibe with the day that you put down the lulav? Well, that's what the question is now, as far as he's concerned, okay?
Okay.
You can see that Bryce is very often they need clarification.
Clarification.
It's not simple. They bring him in for support, but at the same time, the support may be a little bit weak because they also have to be defined correctly. Okay. So anyway, getting back over here. Yeah, Rabbi Yeshua Mimishas Hanachosar, right at the time that you put down the lulav, okay?
Rabbi Yeshua.
That was the Brisa. So Omar Rabbi Eliezer, and now they go back again to the argument. Omar Rabbi Eliezer. The others said, Ho will the Arbas meaning alolo inum boy and elirzos halamayim, inasmuch as the four species, you know, that we use, the lulav, the Ezra, Kadasm, and Arovas, are there primarily in order to supplicate God for water, right? Look Hashem, just that Sha'arba Minim Halolo, Kiev Shabahim Balomayim, just as these four species cannot exist without water, so Kahiev Shalo Oilom Balomayim. So likewise the world cannot exist without water. Therefore for that reason I say we should begin mentioning right at Geburis Keshovim on the first day of Sukkot. Okay? Since I, Rabbi Eliezer, primarily am supporting my opinion by relying upon the lulav. The lulav, the Esra Kadosh Marabas, okay? They are there in order to ask God for rain, and so therefore this is a proper time to mention that God has the Gevurah, that he has the power to bring rain to the world, okay? Omele Rabbi Yeshua, so Rabbi Yeshua has a counter-argument, he says, Halog Shomim Bachag, isn't it true, he says, that if it rains on Yontif, Eino Ela Simum Klolo, that's a sign of curse, as we already said when we explained it last week.
You can't eat in the sukkah.
Right? You can't eat in the sukkah. It's a mitzvah to eat in the sukkah the first night. By us, it's also the second night.
Right.
Okay? So, Amalei Rabbi Eliezer. So, Rabbi Eliezer said, Apanilo Amarti Lishol. He says, look, I didn't say that you pray for rain, Ela Lahaskir. But I simply said that you should mention this among God's attributes of Gevurah. Okay? Uchishem, and just as Shetchias HaMesim Maskei Kol Lashon HaKulo, just as he mentions God's ability to raise the dead, restore them to life all year round, right? The Eino Ela Bismana, and yet it's only going to happen at the time that the Rebbeinu Shalom decides that this is the right time. So kach maschiyun gevuras geshomim kol hashomim. So likewise we can mention the gevuras geshomim all year round. V'yeinu nele bizmanon, but they belong properly only in their right time. Let the Rebbeinu Shalom decide
what time. Right.
All right. So what would this lead us to? This would lead us now to the opinion that, hey, Rabbi Eliezer says, look, if you want to say mashvurach all year round, even if it's not the right time, you can do so. Needless
really
to say, that would scandalize all the shuls. But this is his private opinion, right? So the peacock, for that reason, in Bola Hasya Kolashan and Kula Maske.
It isn't, it's a fila. It's just
an entreaty.
He's mentioning that this is part of God's Gevuros, okay?
It's a statement.
Exactly.
That's a very radical way.
Yeah,
yeah, he's
right.
A real left winger, this guy.
It's very unusual.
Yeah. But of course, as we discussed this last week too, Einon Elabiz Manon, okay, the Rebbeinu Shalom is going to bring the rain in its proper time. But the question is about Mashiach HaRuach. Maybe what he is implying is as follows. that all year round, if you say it, don't try upon them, because there's nothing wrong with mentioning it, but it's only a mention. Whereas, beginning, let's say, with the first day of Sukkot, because after all, this is Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, right? Then it becomes like a chiyuv that you begin, that you have to say it beginning at that time. So that may be the explanation. Okay?
That's kind of...
You know, get
yeah,
up
with
a lot of
the
grub
finger, right? Huh?
Right, the golden finger, right.
In other words, it may not be important all year round, but it becomes important on the first day of Sukkot.
Right, exactly. Rabbi Omer, Rabbi says, and of course that's from Yehuda Nosi, right? He says, Omer ani, I say, or in other words, my opinion is, Mishor Shemafsik Mishor Elo, Kach Masin Haskar. So far we've been talking about when do you say it, right? When do you stop saying this is what Rabbi wants to know. So he says, my opinion is that at the time when you stop saying Talamotar, that's, you know, the She'elah, in other words, begging God that they should give rain. So I say you should also stop saying Mashiach Baruch at that time. Okay?
Mafsik is
stopped. Mafsik is stopped.
Stopped.
Right.
Yeah.
So Kach Mafsik Vaskar. So you stop mentioning Mashiach Baruch at that point. Rabbi Yehuda ben Mitzera, now we have other opinions that were not quoted in the Mishnah, but now they are quoted over here to show that there was really a variety of opinions as to when to begin to say Mashiach Ruach. Okay? By the way, if you remember, the Mishnah had a somewhat different opinion as to when do we stop. When do we actually stop? So the last part of the Mishnah over here, it says that the Oyelam will say our teva, if you remember that when the person goes up to daven for the Yomim, so what did we say? So we said on Shmini Atzer is the Baal Shachris doesn't say,
sorry, but the
Baal Musaf begins saying Mashiach Baruach. Whereas with the first day of Pesach, the Mishnah Paskins is just the other way around. In Shachris, we're still saying Mashiach Baruach, right? But the Musaf, that's when we stop saying Mashiach Baruach.
Well, it's the other end. It's the other end.
Yeah, that's the end of it. But here, as you see, simply Rebbe is only saying that when you stop one, you stop the other. That's all that he's saying at this particular point. But Rebbe did not say, when do you stop? That's based already upon what the Mishnah itself gave us the clue to that. Okay? When do we stop? Which, of course, is the first day of Pesach. Rabbi Yehuda ben Mitzera, Omer, he says that B'sheni b'chag u'maskin. He says that you begin saying Mashiach Baruch on the second day of Sukkot. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says B'shishi. Begin saying it on the sixth day. Shishi b'chag u'maskin. Rabbi Yehuda b'shem Rabbi Yehoshua Omer. And then, of course, at this particular point, and they quote, you know, what corresponds to the last part of the Mishnah that we had, that Rabbi Yehuda says the name of Rabbi Yehoshua, right? He says, so over l'pnei ha'teva b'yom tov ha'achwin shel chag, that the person who goes to daven for the Amun on Shmini Atzeres, that would be, so ha'achwin maskir, in other words, the latter one, in other words, the one who's davening Musaf, mentions Mashiach Baruch, but ha'ishoin einon maskir, right? And the Yom Tov Rishon Shel Pesach, but on the first day of Pesach, it's just the other way. Rishon Maskir, in other words, the Baal Shachris says it. No, Achron ain't a Maskir, but the Baal Musaf does not mention anymore.
I'm confused to some extent. Yeah. You're referring to the second day of the Yantip, but the second day of Yantip is already Chol Moed.
Correct. But he says that this is his opinion when you started to say it. Okay?
Because we assume that when we were talking about Rabbi Eliezer, that he was referring to the last day of the Chag, and that's where, and if it was the Hashanah Rabbah, it would be in Chol Hamoed.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take a look for a moment at the third Tosfos on the page. Okay, let's take a look at the second one, very short, but you know, that's sort of like little clinchers for some of the ideas that we said. So the second one says, Dama Rabbi Abahu, Rabbi Abahu said, Leila Moda Rabbi Eliezer Medonov. He says that Rabbi Eliezer learned his point of view, could begin saying it on the first day, only from Lulav, right? Perish, the meaning then is, the Sphira Lay, the Nisachle Havaat Bashani. That obviously then, Rabbi Eliezer would be of the opinion that the Nisach HaMayim begins only with the second night of Yantar, right? So that's sort of the clincher to tell us that Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is based fully on the Lulav and not on the Nisach HaMayim. Okay? Alright, now the third text was over there. Mishas Natilas Lulav, Perish, in other words, from the time that you begin using the Lulav, right? Perish the Hainu Techilas Yom Rishon Shal Sukkos. This is from the beginning, right, the first day of Sukkos. Obviously it has to be day because we already said why, you know, it says L'chachem L'chem Bayom, right? So we know it can't be to begin saying it to the Myra of the first Myra of Sukkos. It has to be in the daytime. Okay? So that we know. Alright, so now how about Rabbi Yeshua Omer Mishas Hanochaso? That he says, you know, it's when you put down the lulav of Perish, that would mean then Le'urta, the evening, the Motzoi Shavi Shel Sukkos, which would mean, in other words, you should begin to say Marsha Baruach in accordance with this opinion, quoting Rabbi Yeshua, right, to the Ma'ariv of Shmini Atzeres.
Right, right.
Because you put down the lulav on the 7 day, so immediately when Ma'ariv comes with Shmini Atzeres, so this is when you should be saying it. Okay?
It would be the evening of the actually the evening following Hashanah Rabbah.
Absolutely right. Right. This is what Tosfos says. Of course, afterwards we're not going to accept that opinion, but that's besides the point. We're trying to analyze the words, the expressions, and find out, you know, whether these statements lead us. What would be a logical inference from them? Mishor Shemaf Sikin Lishol, may as well take a look at a couple of more Tesfuses over there. Do all the Tesfus on the page. Of course, Tesfus is very good over here. He's always good, but sometimes you can get lost in the Tesfus that'll go for page after page.
What does it mean,
Tesfus? Tesfus means literally additions.
Additions.
They were additions that were made to the text of the Talmud after Rashi. The earliest Balei Tosfos were Rashi's sons-in-law and his grandsons and so on. They were the first ones. And then, of course, you had others of their contemporaries.
After Rashi.
Yeah. So they were already. That's why very often, I mean, usually they'll quote Rashi first.
Right.
And then after that, you know, they'll either agree or disagree with what Rashi has to say. I mean, the fact that he might be Rabbeinu Tam Zeda, for example, but Rabbeinu Tam still had his own ideas about how to understand text, okay? Or the Rashbam, the Reb Shmuel Ben Meir, who was the son-in-law of Rashi, he also had his opinions, you know, as to...
Didn't always agree.
Right, didn't always agree.
But which opinion was considered right?
Oh, well, come to that.
Which is considered right? I would say there is no hard and fast rule about it.
My father used to say, "A Rashi frequent it can catch it."
Yeah, well, this is a.
He said, but. And Rashi,
you don't ask any questions. Rashi says that's Rashi it. That's right, right.
Catch it.
Nevertheless,
you don't question Rashi.
Right.
You don't ask any questions.
Right, you don't ask any questions. You don't question what Rashi says.
Right.
Yeah, I've heard, I mean, Lubavitch also said the same thing, yes. Right. But the truth of the matter is that the Balei Tosfos, they didn't hesitate to question what Rashi had to say.
They didn't hesitate.
No. And then you come to a later generation, and you come, for example, you look in Bible commentaries, you know, commentaries to the Torah. And you see, first of all, the Rashbam.
Who's the Rashbam?
The Rashbam was the son-in-law of Rashi.
The son-in-law.
See, son-in-law, was he a grandson? I guess he was a grandson.
A grandson of Rashi.
He was a grandson, excuse me.
Yeah.
He was a grandson of Rashi. At any rate, he quotes that, you know, when he learned the Torah with his Zeta.
Zeta was Rashi.
Who was Rashi and so on. So he says, you know, Rashi was already an older man, you know, by the time that the Rashbam was learning with him. But he says that Rashi said to him that if he had to write his commentary over, he would have written it a little bit differently, because he agreed with some of the points that his Eidah called the Rashbam had to say. So we have a Perush Rashbam also. If you have, you know, a Chumash which has many commentaries, you'll see the Rashbam is one of them. Okay. Then along came a later generation. First of all, I have to tell you that roughly about Rashi's time, but without anyone knowing each other, you had Rabbi Ibn Ezra in Spain, who also wrote his commentary. All right. So finally, along comes the Ramban.
Where was he born?
He was born in Spain. Right. Eventually, he died in Eretz Israel. Right. So the Ramban comes along, and in his commentary, he usually starts by quoting Rashi. Then he'll quote Ibn Ezra, and then he'll say why he disagrees with both of them. So the point that I'm making is, even though you heard the expression of Rashi Fechmanish, but nevertheless, you know, greatest scholars that all of us in this room put together didn't hesitate to ask questions about it. Now, getting back, you know, to your question, as which
why his father said that.
Pardon me?
So I understand.
It's a matter of respect.
Well, of course.
Also, because
there's no
think that generally it is
for the accepted,
accepted
right,
learning.
Right. There's no question that for us, you know, who follow a traditional path in learning Torah, that Rashi is still
number one.
It's Peh Kodesh, a holy mouth, so to speak. There's no question about that. We understand the text through Rashi. He was the one who opened up this, besides being one who opened up the study of the Torah. No question about that. So if you can disagree with him on the point here, point there, or something like that, but still, we have to understand Rashi in order to know how we disagree with him. Or how others disagree with him.
Well, if you disagree with him, you better be on the ground.
Now, I forget whether it was David, were you the one, or was it Irv, I forget, who asked about which one do we accept as authoritative, Rashi or Tosfos?
Okay, which is the right answer?
The answer is, as I told you, at times Tosfos seems to be the accepted one. The Psak would be based upon Tosfos, okay?
Yeah.
But at other times, they'll say that Tosfos didn't really understand the Rashi very well.
What he meant, huh?
And that Rashi's opinion makes more sense in its context or something like that. So that's why I cannot generalize about it. But let's try to understand each on his own merits. If we can do that, we've already accomplished a great deal in Torah learning. All right. So getting back over here to the Tosfos. All right. The Shah Shemafsik and the Shirl, the fourth one over there, right?
Yeah,
I'm doing the Tosfos right now. So, from the time that we stop asking what? The Saint Talmotor, right? The Birkas HaShonim. So, Poskim, Elahaskim, Merd HaGeshem, Mitchias HaMesim. In other words, the Tosfos is simply explaining text. They say that his statement means that when you stop saying Talmotor, in the Shmon Esra, in the Birkas HaShonim, you know, the blessing Baruch Aleinu, right? Because remember, why is it called Birkas HaShonim? Because we say, you know, bless. So that's why that's the official name of that particular bracha over there. So you begin they stop mentioning also, you know, Meret HaGeshem in Techiyas HaMesim. However, I do want to tell you, technically, this is also not 100% accurate. Why is it not? We can understand that it's a generalization, but in reality, technically, it's not right.
Technically, it's not right. What?
That when you stop saying
Talmotor,
you stop saying Marshavah Ruach.
Oh, yeah.
Technically, it's not right, because when do we say Talmotor? We say it only in weekday Shemoneh Esrei.
Talmotor also stops at Pesach, right?
Actually, the last time we say it would be Kamincha, Erev Pesach, right?
Right.
But Mashmaruch was still saying to Myra,
we're also saying it
to Shacharis of the first day Pesach.
Say that again, I'm sorry. I know this is basic. Talmotar we stop saying.
Yeah, right. Talmotar we stop saying. The last time that we actually say it is to Mincha of Erev Pesach.
Okay.
But to Ma'ariv of the first day Pesach, as well as to Shacharis of the first day Pesach, we're still saying Masha V'Ruach. It's only with Musaf that we stop saying it. And now I have to tell you, I mean, when it says also with Musaf we stop saying, over here there's a difference of opinion between the practice that we find among, let's say, the Kehillas and Eretz Yisrael, and also many of the Hasidim, probably most of the Hasidim, as compared to what should be the practice of the Ashkenazim. Normal Ashkenazic practice is that in the Shtilei Shmoneh Esrei, we would say, in other words, the silent Musaf, we still say Masha V'Ruach. This is Nusach Ashkenaz. In Eretz Yisrael, they do not. Why not? I'll tell you why not. Because in Eretz Yisrael, instead of saying all the prayers as part of the first two brachas, they instead say the prayer prior to the Musaf service. So since they've already mentioned Tal prior to Musaf, therefore they no longer say Masha V'Ruach. Okay?
Tal takes the place of Masha V'Ruach.
Tal takes the place, and you know that in Eretz Yisrael, also Mont Chassidim, they use the phrase Morid HaTal. As part of the prayers, you know, beginning with the Musaf time of the first day Pesach, right through, you know, until the morning of the Shmini Atzeres.
But Tal isn't the same as rain, is it?
Tal is
Dew.
It's a big
difference. Yeah, right. And as we'll see, our practice not to say Morid HaTal is based upon the fact that the Gemara is going to say that that's only voluntary. It's not obligatory to say it. So we follow since it's not obligatory, we don't say it. And Eretz Yisrael, well, okay, they have their own minhagim.
We only say what we're obliged to say. No.
We're not obligated to say it, so we don't say it. Right, exactly. And this has been the practice of the great Ge'onim and Gedolim and so on, for generation after generation. Okay. Right, and so on and so forth. In other words, the person who davens for the Yomim on Shmini Atzeres, so we say the Baal Musaf, right, Achron, the last one to daven. The Baal Musaf, he's the one who mentions it. Perish Achron Sheb Nispaleo Tfilas Musaf. Or Rishon Eino Maskir, and what does it mean when it says that the first one doesn't? So Perish does mean Sheb Nispaleo Shachris Eino Maskir, right? Rishalmi Ka Omar, now he quotes the Rishalmi. Shalmi says, Amai Eino Maskir, Meyurta. Why don't we begin saying Masha V'Ruach the previous evening? In other words, when Sunni Shmini Atzeres comes, why should we start him to say already Masha V'Ruach? Which might be a possible interpretation of what Rabbi Yeshua is saying, right? Remember what we've learned over here before in Taisus, that they said maybe what Rabbi Yeshua is saying is that it's Meyurta. In other words, as soon as you put down the lulav, which would be as soon as you finished with Hoshana Rabba, right? So you begin to maskir and Rosh Hashanah, right? So maybe it means that it should be said at night. So Yerushalmi wants to know why not start in with the night of Shmini Atzeres to say Masha V'Ruach? Why wait first until Musaf, right?
Because there's no prohibition saying it at night.
Yeah. So Perush mitfilas aris, why don't they begin saying it with Ma'ariv? Well, Mishana and the Gemara there, then so the Rishalmi explains, Dileis Taman Kol Ama, because at Ma'ariv time you don't have everybody there in shul. A lot of people don't come to shul at night. Okay, so now the next question logically is, well, Itchachu b'Tzafra, so in that case why don't they do it to Shachris then, when people already are in shul? So Perush meaning mitfilas Shachris. So Mishana, so the explanation is that the people who come first in the morning will think that maybe, and they weren't there the night before, they might think that it was already started to say it the night before. That's why we wait until when? Until Musaf. So at that time, the official announcement is made, everybody knows that this is the official starting time.
wait a second, the people that come at Shachri, they come in, they think that it was already done, but Harapi. So
right.
they immediately do it. But if we wait, we don't do it, and then we just have an announcement, and we're going to do it.
Right, exactly. Then everybody starts there, and Shul knows that this is the right time to get saved. Exactly. Okay.
I mean, they had trouble getting them in, even then. Huh?
Sometimes.
That could be.
You had small communities, too. You had little villages and things like that, you know, where maybe they didn't have an easy time to make a million. Absolutely. Maybe they had a few lazy people, too.
Yeah.
No,
how close did the Tosafot live to the era of the Crusades? Was that
they were living during that time. Rashi lived during the Crusades, and Tosafot was also an extended period.
Tosafot was after Rashi.
Yeah.
May have been in hiding. I mean, they had a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
The Tosafot came after Rashi, right?
I say, the authorities in Tosafot, I mean, it's not a man by David Toyskis.
No, I mean
you had various scholars who were quoted. Okay?
Yeah.
But they were, the beginning would be with the sons-in-law of Rashi in his generation, the grandsons of Rashi in their generation, and then, you know, somewhat later authorities. Yeah.
Who was Rabbeinu Tam?
Rabbeinu Tam was Rashi's grandson. His real name was Yaakov. But you know, it's written Yaakov Ishtab, so that's the reason why they call him Rabbeinu Tam. He was the son also of Meir.
Okay, so Rashi
so
and Rabbeinu
Shmuel and the Rabbeinu Tam would be brothers, I guess. If I have my genealogy correct. If not, they were first cousins. It's either one or the other, but I think they were actually brothers. That I would have to look back again to a history to see. Yeah. All right. Now, how about the other opinions that we mentioned? One about Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, who says when? Second day Yontav you begin? And Rabbi Akiva, who says when? The Shishi b'chagumasi, right on the sixth day of Yontav? Rabbi Akiva.
Akiva.
Right. And then, okay. So he says, Shapir ko'omalei Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua. It says, you know, Rabbi Eliezer could argue very nicely with Rabbi Yehoshua and say, look, if this Mishnah says what? That the person who goes to Davin.
I think we may have skipped a line here or something.
Did I? Then Rabbi Yehuda comes along in the name of Rabbi Yehoshua.
Right.
Okay. And Omer, and he says, "Oil of the Ateva b'Yom Tov v'Achman Shel Chag," that the person who goes to Davin for the Yomid on Shmini Atzeres, right? So Achman Masker, Rishon in Masker, right? In other words, the Malbusa mentions it, and Bar Shachris doesn't, and that's we just read the Tosfos why. And then b'Yom Tov Rishon Shel Pesach, but on the first day of Pesach. Rishon Maskir, right? Achman Einu Maskir. That the Baal Shachris mentions it, but the Baal Musaf doesn't. So he says, Shapir Kamalei, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua. Maybe it's a good argument on the part of Rabbi Eliezer to Rabbi Yeshua. So Omalapo, Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua said to you, Bishlamot Chesameisim Maskir. I can understand the fact that why do we say Tchiyas HaMeisim? The Chula Yemo Zamanehu. Any day it is possible for God to bring about this miracle, right? Elo Geshomim. But when it comes to rain, Kol Emas the Asyans Ben Ayhuli, you say that it's perfectly okay to say Mashmurach all year round, but there is a time for it. It's a definite time as far as rain is concerned. The Hot Nan. Didn't we learn another Mishnah? This will come to a little bit later, which says Yotzo Nisan. If the month of Nisan has gone, the Yordo Geshomim, and then, in other words, if it starts into rain after Nisan, so Simon Klolo. This is a bad sign. Shenema, because we have a story that we find in the book of Shmuel Aleph, where Shmuel remonstrates with the people, you know, they want a king, and he says it's all wrong to do it, and you're sinning by asking, you know, to have a king. And finally he consents to them, you know, after his arm is twisted, you know, by the Rabbeinu Shalalem. and then it starts into rain and thunder and everything else. And yet, you know, this was already after the time when rain should have stopped falling. Okay? So Shmuel says to the people, "Halo ketzir chitim hayom." This is the time already when we should be harvesting the wheat. This is not the time for the rain to fall. And therefore it shows, you know, that God is actually displeased with your request. But from this we learn already, you know, that if it's the time for the wheat harvest, then obviously it's no longer the time
to say
for rain to be falling. Therefore, you know, that's the wrong time.
Here you're talking about the winter wheat. No, as I understand, there are usually two wheat harvests.
Oh, I don't know whether there was Israel you have winter wheat and summer wheat. This I'm not sure.
Close, but they do also do plant two wheat harvests. One comes in the fall and one also is like in the spring.
Alright, it may be so. Maybe so.
Because it couldn't be, I mean, it wouldn't make sense.
Okay.
It couldn't have waited.
Yeah, you may be right. I'll tell you why. Because the fall one, I mean, we can understand, I mean, that this is, you know, Sukkot is Chag HaAtzif, it's the festival of the ingathering of all the grain that grows in the field and so on and so forth. But Shavuos, remember, is the time, you know, it's not just Yom HaBikurim, the time of first fruits, but it's also a time, Chag, what do they call it again? Anyway, you have the Shtei HaLechem, you know, the two loaves of bread, which are there in order to symbolize, the Chag HaKotzir it's called. In other words, the festival which marks the reaping of it. That's when they first begin reaping the wheat. Okay? So, then in this case, I mean, we'd have to say that this happened, you know, roughly, let's say, after Shavuos, when there should not be any rain. Okay?
Interesting. Yeah. Thank you for the explanation.
Rabbi Yehuda ben Masero Omer, remember we quoted him just a few lines above saying B'sheni b'chag u'maskir, that he begins saying Mashiv Ruach on the second day Yontif. So my Talmud, Rabbi Yehuda ben Masero, what is the reason? Why does he say second? The Tanya, we have a teaching which says Rabbi Yehuda ben Masero Omer says Ne'mar b'sheni, on the second day of Yontif, it is written Beniskehem. Okay?
The drink offering.
Right. And their libation offerings, right? Venema Bashishi. And on the sixth day of Yontif, what do we have? Unisocheho. Also, and its libations. Okay? Venema Bashvi. And on the seventh day, it's written Kemishpatam. According to their ruling, okay? Hare Mayim. So from this we learn the fact that it implies, say, prayers for rain, or say, you know, Mashavarat for rain. Why? Because if you have, first of all, Hare Mem, Yud Mem. That's what the text says, alright? Hare Mem, Yud Mem. So that gives you a Mem, a Yud, and a Mem. So Hare Kan, Mayim. From this we see water. This shows us that there is a hint in the Torah for this practice of Nisach HaMayim, for the water libation, which is not commanded actually in the Torah, but it is. All right. Now, let's take a look again at the Tosfos. Okay? Yes.
I'm sorry, just where did they get the Mem Yud Mem from? Where is that?
Okay, this is what Tosfos is going to explain right now.
Oh,
that's why I say let's look at Tosfos.
Way ahead, all right.
Okay.
Here it says Med Yud Mem right here.
Right, okay. Mem, Miniskehem, Dersir, Basheni. Right? The second day we find the word Viniskehem. You see, it could have simply said Viniskor. It could have said that. For example, passage that we're all familiar with. Okay, V'yom Ha'ashavah Shteichos V'nation Ot Mimim, right? Shnei Yisroelim Sos Bincho B'lo V'shemen V'nisko. Right, okay. So you see, V'nisko, whatever it may be. Okay? But that's that would have been sufficient, right? But here it says when this kehem, and that's a mem, you know, at the end. So therefore, it implies it's more than one nisa, right? The yud, dichsib b'shishi, the yud is what we find in the sixth day where it says unisochecha, right? You see that the yud over there, unisochecha. So far we have a mem from the niskehem and the yud from unisochecha. Umem shemashvii. And how about the mem on the seventh day? Ksiv kemishpotam. Doesn't say kemishpot the way we usually find it, but it says kemishpotam. Right.
Plural.
So the have emayim. That shows us this. Right. So tam and the Rabbi Akiva b'shishi. Right. Unesocheho. So now, of course, the question is, all right. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseir, we could understand. He says you started to say it on the second day because that's the first mention that we have, and it says that mem over there. Right. And then it's followed by another yud, another mem, and so therefore that implies mayim. Okay? So therefore I say, starting to say it on the second day of Yontif. Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, he said, starting to say on the sixth day. So what does he do? What about that mem to begin with? That's not the point that he wants to make. He wants to make the point from Unisocheho, which is a plural. It means, and its various nisuchim, right? The mashma, which would imply trei nisuchim, two libations, namely a wine libation
and
a water libation. So hilkoch, for that reason, b'shishi b'chagu maski gavus kesham. This is the reason why he chose the sixth day. You know, not like Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, who chose the second day. Right. Okay. So we'll hunt it from there. Shall we get down to the bottom?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Down to the bottom. Yeah. All right, so the Gemara wants to know. So what is the reason? Why this difference that on the second day, the knockout, why did he take, in other words, why did Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira choose the second day? Because when the first mention is made, it is made on the second day. So Hilkoch, therefore, he says, Pasheni Matuchivin. Now, Rabbi Akiva, how about him? Who, Omer Bashishi Bechag, he says it's on the sixth day of Yontif Umaskir. Shenemar Bashishi Unisocheha. And in Socheha, as the Gemara says over here, Vishnei Nisuchin Hakos Medaber. It's talking about two types of libations, Echod Nisuch HaMayim, V'Echod Nisuch HaYayim. So now, they ask the following question on him. V'yemor, maybe I should say Tavayhu Dechamra. Maybe the meaning is in the Socheho that they actually pour two libations of wine, not one of wine and one of water, but two libations of wine. So he says, So Valok Rabbi Yehud ben Maseira. So the answer is he's also in agreement with Rabbi Yehud ben Maseira, the Yomar, who said, Ramize Mayo, that there is a hint in the Torah why we should begin saying it, you know, during Sukkot. Okay, I think we'll stop at this particular point and continue from here with Daf Gimel next week, Kim Yitzha Hashem.
Daf Gimel, right.
Right. Okay, so we finish the first Daf over here. Ready to plunge forward. Okay.
Very good. Okay. Daf Gimel?
Yeah, we're ready for Daf Gimel, but let's refer back again to the last couple of lines on the previous page, okay? All right. We saw that Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yeshua, and so on, you know, they're all looking for a remez, you know, in the Torah. Where does it say that you have to begin to recite Masha Baruch on a particular day, right?
Right.
And so we saw, you know, that because the way one that says Kamesh Batam, and then yeah, the what we have over there, yeah. Rabbi Akiva, for example, said B'shishi b'chag maskir shnei b'shis unisochecha, right? Unisochecha, he says there we have a remez that b'shnei nisochim hakos b'daber, that the Torah is talking about two types of libations, echod nisoch hamayim v'echod nisoch hayayin, right? One of them would be the libation of water, and the other one the libation of wine. So the Gemara first asks the question, the Yamur, Tavayhu de Chamra, maybe instead we're talking about two libations of wine, and there's no reference, I mean, to the libation of water. So the answer is that Sovalok Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. So apparently he was of the same opinion as Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, the Yomar, who said that Remizei Maya, that we have a remez, as we said, you know, in the Torah, to the fact that water has to be mentioned on the Yontif of Sukkot, right? And we did the Tospus, the last Tospus on the previous page, right, where it says Mem Miniskehem, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is Tiba Sheni, and that's the on the second day Yontif is written Miniskehem, so there's a Mem at the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the Yud, where is the Yud? The Sibi Shishi, that's on the sixth day, where it says Unesocheho, right? And then Umem Shebashvi is Kesiv Kimishpotan. So between Niskehem, Nisocheho, and Mishpotom, so they have a mind that
it
comes out the Mem Yud Mem. And it says Tamad Rabbi Akiva Bishishi Unisocheho, and then why did Rabbi Akiva insist that on the sixth day rather than the way Ben Beseira said on the second day, right? The Mashma train is Sochim. There are two Nisachim, and so Hilkoch Bashishi Bachagum Askir Gibus Kishom. This is where the Gemara stands right now. So the Gemara now wants to know as follows. It says, Isovaloak Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Nimuk HaVosek. Why, if Rabbi Akiva says, the same as Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, that we find the reference to water on the holiday of Sukkot, the water libation, of course, right, from the Mem, Yud Mem, so that's a very logical question. Neimor Kavosei, why doesn't he agree then with Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, since he's relying on the same reasoning? So instead of saying, let's start saying it on the sixth day, let him say like Yehuda ben Beseira, who said it's on the second day. Okay. So the answer is, Kosova Rabbi Akiva, the answer is because when Rabbi Akiva thought, you know, that there's a remnant to water, so it's ki kasiv nisuch yisero abashishud yisiv. The reason being that when we have an additional nisuch, every day there is a nisuch. But where does it say the niskehem? I mean, excuse me, unisocheho, which is the word that we find on the sixth day. So that's only on the sixth day that we have it. That's why he did not agree with Rabbi Yisera, that even though they both hold that Mayim is hinted at in the Torah, but nevertheless, he feels that it is on the sixth day that specifically the concept of having two different types of nisuchim is
libations,
mentioned.
Yeah.
Right, two different types of libations, one for water and
one for wine.
Right.
There it's mentioned specifically on the sixth day.
Right. Okay. Now, Tanya Rabbi Nosson Eber. We have another baraisa which says that Rabbi Nosson says we have a statement. This is in reference to the daily sacrifice. It's written by Kodesh Haseich Nesu Sheichal Ad Hashem. Okay, it's what the pasuk says. By Kodesh means in the sanctuary. Haseich Nesu Sheichal. You have to pour a libation of strong drink, in other words, of wine, Ad Hashem. Okay, so it says. Why does it say Haseich Nesach, as we'll see in a second? In other words, he says, in reality, this pasuk hints at the fact that there are two different libations. Not that every day there are two different libations, because every day, what libation had to be poured?
Wine.
Wine, there's no question. Torah says specifically that you have to pour a libation of wine with the sacrifice, with the tomi. Okay? Right. But the fact that it says Hasek Nesach, we'll see that according to him, according to Rabbi Nosson, that the Torah is teaching us that there are actually two different Nisuchim. Echod Nisuch HaMayim, one of them is this libation of water, the Echod Nisuch HaYayim, the other one libation of wine. So again they ask the same question that we had at the bottom of the previous page, Emor Tavaihu the Chamro. Why can't we say that they both are references to the libation of wine? And frankly, to me, this is a very logical question to ask, and I'll tell you why. How many sacrifices, what we call the tomid, you know, the every single day?
Gorban tomid.
Right. The answer is twice. Once in the morning.
Once.
right? Baboker, and the other one is Bein Harbayim, the afternoon.
Nesach.
Right. So that may be when it says over there, Bakurish Hasech, Nesach Sheikh Al Hashem, if you want to say, that maybe the Torah is talking then about the two libations of wine, one in the morning after the Tavit Shel Shachar, and the other one in the evening after. But of course, this is not a drush. This is only logic. When you want to make a drush, so you have to express a little bit, a little differently. Okay. So this is my opinion. That was a very logical question to ask. But anyway, the way he interprets it is, we'll see. How does he get it? He says, why are we ruling out that he's talking about two libations of wine? Im kein, he says, if that's the case, then lichtreif krol, the Torah could have written, o haseich haseich, o nesach nesach. Either one word, repeat it twice, or the other word, and repeat it twice. Why haseich nesach? Why does it say haseich nesach? In other words, pour out a libation. So Shmat Bino, from this we derive the fact that Chad de Mayo, Chad de Chamra, one of them is for water and the other one is for wine. Good evening, Stan. How are you? Yeah. We're on Daf Gimel right now. Time is. Of the actual language of the Torah. You have to understand that. The language of the Torah very often uses a verb followed by a noun. That's the way it does. Or a verb in the infinitive followed by a verb in the tense. Like, for example, holoch yelech. Okay? Where holoch is the verbal noun of going, and yelech is, of course, the future. He will go. Okay? So in English, you can show the double nature of the, you know, because this is the nature of the Hebrew language. So, they tried to fudge around in the English translation, you know, as to what to do with that. Okay, im shamoa tishmiyu, right? Shamoa is the verb meaning hear. Tishmahu, you will hear. If hear, you will hear. Now, obviously, in English, that sounds bad. In Hebrew, it's perfectly good. So, therefore, what do they do in the English translation? Well, they translate it as if you will surely hearken unto my voice, or something like that. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they try. But you cannot translate exactly word for word. You can understand.
That's pretty close, though.
Yeah. It is. I mean, essentially, they're getting the idea across. Mm-hmm. But of course, if you have Shamoa Tishbehu, right, then you can make a drash already from the fact that you have the word Shamoa. Listen, for example, Gemara says, Medrash says, you know, that Im Shamoa, if you will listen with the first commandments that God gives you, and then Tishmahu, you will hearken again with all the other commandments. In other words, like Mitzvah Gaveris Mitzvah, and so on, the idea, okay? So that, you know, it's subject to a drash. So over here, Haseich Nesach, right? Haseich is the verb. Make a libation. Nesach, pouring out, or something like that. But he wants to prove the fact that there's already a hint in the Torah that there are two types of nisukim, one for wine, which is the regular one, and one for water, which, as we said, is particularly only for the festival of Sukkot. So he gets it from that fact. All right.
See now, how he manages to right. prove that.
Yeah. Elohodetnan. So now they bring a kasha based on the Mishnah. Mishnah says in the Gemara Sukkah, Nisach HaMayim Kol Zayin, that every one of the 7 days of Sukkot there was a libation of water. So money, they want to know with who will this particular Mishnah agree, because over here, what did we learn? We learned that there are differences of opinion, right? E Rabbi Hoshua Neimachad Yoma. If we say in accordance with Rabbi Yoshua, who says that you do it on what day?
On the sixth day.
No,
the Yoshua second says day. On second, the second day.
It's either the seventh day or Shmini Atzeres. there's some doubt about what it means, because are they referring to?
Well, who said the second day?
Okay. Second day was not Rabbi Yeshua, but it was Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira.
Ben Beseira.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
The reason why I say we're not sure exactly what it is, because let's go back again to the Mishnah at the beginning. Rabbi Yeshua, if you remember, says in the Mishnah over here, V'yom tov v'achron shel chag, right? From the last day of Yontif. Now, the only question is, what does he mean by the last day of Yontif? If we are to say by the last day of Yontif, he means Shmini Atzeres, okay. So, if we remember, the Gemara wanted to know, so how was Shmini Atzeres relevant to Sukkot? Because it's already a separate Yontif, right? Of course, actually, we do pask in accordance with him, that we begin saying it on Shmini Atzeres, okay. But there's another statement attributed to Rabbi Yehoshua in which he says, when do we begin saying it? It's from the day when they put down the lulav. Yom Hanochas HaLulav. Remember that phrase?
Right, right.
Okay. And there we don't know. What does he mean about, you know, the Hanochas Lulav? Okay. If we mean the seventh day, because that's the last day in which we put down the lulav, and it's the last day that we use, and then we don't use it anymore, that may be what he means. Maybe. Okay? If we say that he means that Yemanochas HaLulav, since the lulav is required any time during the seventh day, if you haven't had a chance to make the bracha, you know, let's say in the morning, so you have up to sunset in order to make the bracha on the seventh day, right? And in that particular case, the implication is that he means Shmini Atzeres. But do we have any reference to a water libation on Shmini Atzeres? We don't have. So that's why we're a little bit in a puzzle as to what we mean by this. So here it says that at best, how many days would we have a water libation in accordance if he says it's the day that we put down the lulav? One day, referring, of course, to the seventh day of Yontif. Okay? All right. So, that apparently would be a disagreement with the Mishnah, which says all 7 days. Because all 7 days would mean that you have to do it, you know, day one, day two, day three, and so on. Okay? Not just one day. All right. So, we discount Rabbi Yehoshua at the moment. Okay?
Excuse me. His first on the water libation.
Yeah.
That was his.
That was only for Sukkot. Every day, whenever they had the Tomid Shel Shachar and the Tomid Shel Beinu Abayim, in other words, the daily sacrifice that was carried on in the morning and the one in the afternoon, there was always a wine libation that went along with it. That was part of the offerings that were brought. Just as mincha was also brought, in other words, a flower offering and so on. Uh-huh. Okay, these solas for the Lulav Shaman, for example, uh-huh. Fine flour uh-huh. which has been mixed with oil and so on and so forth. Okay, so these were some of the daily sacrifices or services, whatever you want to call it, you know, that they had in the base.
But there was never a water it was not a libation, a water libation during. Except on the Yontif.
Except on the Yontif of Sukkot. Wasn't on any other Yontif either.
Well, there is a reference. Yeah, there is a connection.
Yeah, right. But the question is, you know, can it be Rabbi Yehoshua who says that all 7 days you do it? Couldn't be, because he said only either Shmini Atzeres or the 7 day of Sukkot. So at best, how many days would that give him? One day. Right? Name of Chag Yomah, right? So we can say, in the case of Rabbi Yehoshua, at best it's one day. E Rabbi Akiva, what if we go according to Rabbi Akiva, who said, when do we start in to mention Masha Baruach? On the sixth day? So that would seem to imply what? Trey Yomah. On the sixth and on the seventh day, there would be a water libation, but there wouldn't be. So we have to rule out, as Rabbi Akiva, also in connection with the Mishnah and Sukkah that we brought that says all 7 days there was a libation of water. E Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, who said that you started to do it on the second day of Yontif, right? Then Shisa Yomi, right? Then there would be 6 days of libation. But where do we get seven? So they say, Le'yolam Rabbi Yehud ben Beserahi. In reality, that Mishnah in Sukkah really represents the opinion of Rabbi Yehud ben Beserahi. The Savalei, to Rabbi Yehuda, the Masnisan, and he's of the same opinion as Rabbi Yehuda in a Baraisa, Itnan, where we learned, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says that Belug Hoyam and Nasek, that they would take a measuring cup which held a log. Log is a certain liquid measure. Only, what do they say? Something like six eggs or something like that, you know, the liquid content of that. So they had a measuring cup for that. And they would measure out, and Minasek called Shmoina, and they would pour water all 8 days, is what he says, right? But then the Mapik Rishon, the Ma'ayel Shmini. So he takes out the first day. He says the first day there was no water libation, but he includes the 8 day. He says on Shmini Atzeres there was a libation. So they say, Yemayishno Rishon Beloi. So why did he leave out the first day instead of the first day they did not have the water libation? Remember, this is the view of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beserahi, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they say the chira mizei mayim, because where we have the first remez, the first hint that water is to be poured on the altar, it's b'sheni huder mizei. It's on the second day of Yontif. So that therefore, in accordance with his opinion, they did do it 7 days, as the Mishnah would say, but not on the first day, and instead they would do it according to him on the 8th day. So now they say Shemini Nami. Maybe what is our objection about the libation on the 8th day? It's Kiramize Mayim Bishviyu Durim Nisei. The contrary, where there is a reference to the water, it's on the 7th day, right? So in that case, at this moment, we don't know who this Mishnah in Sukkah is going to agree with. Doesn't agree with any of these people over here, because each one has a different calculation as to when to say Mashiv Ruach, and therefore presumably they would have a different calculation as to what day the water libation would begin. So they say Ela Rabbi Yehoshua. So we have to come back again to say that it's like Rabbi Hoshua. Why Rabbi Hoshua? Even though we said, you know, that according to him, it's a question too as to whether it's on the 7th day or on the 8th day that he's talking about. But now we have to come back to the conclusion that he's talking about the day upon which we put down the lulav as the 7th day. So that therefore, if that's the case, when Nisach HaMayim called Shiva, right? So that would bring us then that there would be a libation all 7 days. But nevertheless, we can see that there's a great question, because in reality it doesn't really work out according to any of them. Because even Rabbi Yehoshua, if we compare the saying of Mashiv HaRuach to the libations during Sukkot, it's klepsachechnish, because, you know, what is the connection really with the 8th day? And even if we follow Rabbi Yehuda ben Beserahi, who said that you don't do it the first day, but you do it on the 8th day, but does anybody else agree with him? Since the 8th day is not, strictly speaking, part of Sukkot. Right.
When you're
so,
excuse me,
yes.
During the Karbanot on Sukkot, in the days of the Beit Mikdash,
right,
was the water libation done on Shmini Atzeret?
No.
No, it was not.
Wasn't.
Done on
wasn't.
The 8th day.
So, but, you know, it could be that in the arguments they entertained the logic. I mean, maybe Rabbi Yehoshua felt that it could be done on the Shmini Atzeres. Or maybe Rabbi Yehuda ben Beserahi felt that definitely it should be done on Shmini Atzeres, since he excludes the first thing, you understand? But it certainly would be a contradiction to the Mishnah in Sukkah, which says that every day, all 7 days, they would pour out a log. They had this container, which was exactly a measuring cup, you know, that contained the log, and they would pour that water on the Mizbeach. And obviously it would have to mean that all 7 days of Sukkot they did that. That's what it should mean anyway. But you could always argue the point here, there, or the other way, you know. Because we're trying to get into, understand, you know, what were their, what reasoning was, you know, what was their reasoning and what the objections were that are brought forth to their reasoning. Yes.
No. I was just saying that in order to tie it to Shmini Atzeret, you know, Geshem,
correct.
Geshem, you should have some evidence of Mayim. I mean, but there's no direct evidence. It's only inference.
That's correct. It's only an inference. It's just that he felt, why did he do it on Shmini Atzeret? Because he said, if you remember, his reasoning is that rain during Sukkot is considered a klala. So he didn't want to mention it during the 7 days of Sukkot, even though those were the days upon which the water libation was poured.
Supposedly poured.
Right. And of course, the libation is there in order to prepare our hearts to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam in prayer that he should give us rain. The Ritzuya, if you remember, I mean, it's the expression they use. To try to appease the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, put him in a good mood, so to speak, by pouring the water, and, you know, and express actually big thanksgiving to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam for the rain, and at the same time the hope that the new year would be blessed with sufficient rainfall so that it would have a year of prosperity. Okay?
And this is all with the tied into trying to prove when you start to say Mashiva Ruach.
Right. So at any rate, they come to the following conclusion. They say, Hilchaso Gemirala, which means that we learn a halacha. And what does he mean over here by the halacha? Here it doesn't mean halacha in the sense that the law is as follows. It does mean this, we'll see that. But this is what we call a halacha l'Moshe Mesinai. And he'll mention that in Moshe just a couple of lines. What is a halacha l'Moshe Mesinai? It means that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam told Moshe Rabbeinu on Mount Sinai, this is it. Here is the law. People of Israel have to observe this without looking for any more reasoning or something
like
that.
Why, wherefore, what?
Exactly. Okay? And what is this particular halakha l'moshe l'sef? Yes.
Chok. Lo mishpat
a chok. Yeah, right. If you wish, you could say it's a chok. Okay.
Command.
Rabbeinu Shel Olam said to the Moshe Rabbeinu on Mount Sinai, and he told them, look, this is what the law is. What is it? The Yomar Rav Ami Yomar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Nechuni Yishmi Bikas based Choroson. We have a statement that says Rav Ami said in the name of Rav Yochanan, the name of Rav Nechuni Yishmi Bikas based Choron came from this valley of based Choron, and he said, what is the halacha of Moshe Mesinai? It is Eser Netiyos Arova Benisachamayim halacha of Moshe Mesinai. Alright, now I have to explain each of them. These are three things that he says, this is halacha of Moshe Mesinai. Doesn't mean these are the only ones, but these three things, this is it. Eser Netiyos means 10 little trees that have just been planted, saplings. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, what is the reference? The reference is that, as you know, right now, beginning with Rosh Hashanah, we are in a year of Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael. It's a sabbatical year, okay? And of course, in the year of Shemitah, you're not allowed to do any kind of agricultural work during that year. But the Chachamim came and they said, in order to make sure that there wouldn't be any infringement upon Shemitah, they already said that a month before, in other words, beginning with Rosh Chodesh El, you're not allowed to do any more agricultural work in the field. Okay? They gave certain exceptions. I mean, they permitted. Now, this is one exception. If there are 10 trees equally distributed in what they call a besor, which means roughly about 50 square cubits, okay? In that particular area, and you have 10 trees that are equally spaced, these trees need a little nourishment in order to be able to grow. So, the result is that if they're equally spaced, there's enough ground all around it, so you can do work during the month of Elul, prior to that, around these trees in order to enable them to survive. Okay? If, on the other hand, let's say the trees are planted too closely together, then you can't do it.
Why?
For the simple reason that you'd be doing agricultural work in the rest of the field if you tried to save the trees or something like that. So that's prohibited. Or if you didn't have enough trees or something like that. It required that there should be a minimum of 10 trees, but not too much either, you see. So 10 is the measure that they give. So this is a special dispensation to permit the tending of these trees during the month prior to Rosh Hashanah,
right,
so that to give these saplings a chance, you know, to put down roots and begin to grow. Okay? I said there are other exceptions, of course. I mean, the laws of Shemitah, you know, are quite complicated. Point is that if things take root prior to Rosh Hashanah, at least 30 days prior to Rosh Hashanah, then they're not subject to Shemitah that year, but you know, any future one would be. So in Eretz Yisrael, every week, week by week, there are announcements as to what they can no longer use, because presumably you know, they know the growing season, and presumably if this, as of this point, it would have to have struck roots in the year of Shemitah, and therefore you can't use it. You can only use whatever was 30 days, as I said, prior to Rosh Hashanah. So there'll be, you know, an announcement concerning certain products every week as to whether you could use it or you can't. Yes?
I was going to ask you to digress from that.
Yeah.
There is a big machloket about the laws of Shemitah.
Yeah.
From the early days of the
Yishuvim, right?
And I actually forget the name of the Rav in Poland that made this decision.
Okay, it's a famous heter given by Rabbi Yitzhak Elchanan. You know, the Yitzhak Elchanan from the Yishuv's name. Yitzhak Elchanan,
okay.
Spector was his name.
Spector.
Yes, and he was the Rav.
Spector. Right.
He was the Rav in Kovno. Yeah.
Kovno.
Right.
Okay.
Captain lived in those days. Yeah. Except that everything was part of the Russian Empire, but Kovno was the main center.
What did he do?
He gave a
special heter to the people in Eretz Yisrael. You know, at that time they just started the colonization over there, so he gave them a heter that if they sell their land to the Arabs, then in that particular case they could plow this land and work in it, because it wasn't Jewish-owned land. It was Goyish owned land, okay? That way he enabled them to survive the year of Shemitah. It was, you know, sort of what we would call a legal fiction, but he felt it was a necessary heter in order to enable them to survive, and at the same time that they shouldn't break the law of Shemitah, which prohibited agricultural labor.
Same system they use of selling business.
It's something like selling chametz, right?
Chametz, somebody has a business they want to operate on Shabbos, they
right.
sell to a goy
right,
on
right.
Shabbos.
Correct, exactly.
Now, in the last
yes, well, I just want to add.
Go ahead.
All right, Harav Kook, Olav Shalom, in Eretz Yisrael, repeated the okay? Because again, you know, he was concerned, you know, what would happen to the agricultural status of the, you know, the Jewish Yishuv over there if he didn't find some way out. So he adopted the heter of Yitzchak Elchanan, and you know, so there are, to this very day, the Rabbanut Rashid does buy up certain lands from an Arab. I mean the other way around. They sell land to the Arabs in order to permit it. But there are thousands and thousands of people who don't want to abide by it. They say, you know, it's a legal fiction,
but
and therefore they refuse to abide by the heter.
But you, in other words, they do have a heter now.
Yeah, the heter exists, the one. Well,
could
right.
have the heter.
Right.
Well, my question is, there seems to be a growing...
But not everybody accepts it.
Yeah, there seems to be a growing movement of people that don't accept that they want to strictly observe Shemitah.
That is correct.
There they need really subsidization from
farmers.
There
are plans that are being raised in the country right now to help these farmers survive the year.
I was wondering which side of the argument you came down on.
I'm very sympathetic to all those who are trying to observe Shemitah. At the same time, I also understand that at times maybe we're not ripe yet for an absolute, you know, everybody do it. But still, I would say definitely I would encourage and I personally give donations also to the Karen Hashemitah and so on.
I would say that if there was peace and prosperity on land, then the Shemitah should be observed. And the heifer would be put aside. But they have the heifer, they should.
Fact is, I can tell you right now, my daughter and her family, they will never abide by the heifer. Which means that they have to go looking for produce, either that's brought in from foreign countries, or it's grown by Arabs on Arab land and things like that. So, and you know, when there was peace, so you had plenty of Arabs who were in the business of selling it. But now that things are not so ayayay, there may be a greater need even to go back again to the heifer.
Can they also buy from the Negev, because that wasn't part of...
Yeah, there are parts that were considered not part of biblical Eretz Yisrael. Anything grown over there is technically outside of Eretz Yisrael. This is correct. The Arava, it's like a southern desert all the way in the south of Eretz Yisrael. That's considered as not being originally part of, because the question is, what do you consider biblically Eretz Yisrael? So the narrowest one would be Midan at Be'er Sheva. Since this is further to the south than Be'er Sheva, then in that particular case, you might say then, that's why it would be permitted to get from the Arava. That's correct. Yeah.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Yeah. When I was in Eretz Israel during a year of Shemitah, Yamit at that time was still in existence. So they were bringing in flowers and vegetables and fruits and things like that. And they were able to sell it. These were Jews who were doing it, but you see, Yamit was in the Sinai Desert, so it's outside the territory of biblical Eretz Israel. So that it was permitted to buy from them. Of course, afterwards, you know what happened to Yamit, unfortunately.
I was going back to the Egyptian.
Yes. It was destroyed completely, razed to the ground, and a very beautiful little city had something like 5,000 inhabitants in it. It was destroyed. And they had to carry out the people from Yamit, soldiers. They sent soldiers to schlep him out. Alright, so that's Esther Natios. What is Arava? The Arava is the fact that in the Beis HaMikdash, they would go around the altar, the Mizbeach, with long, tall Aravos, willow branches, and then they would put them on the Mizbeach. Others say that first they put them on the Mizbeach and then they marched around. But, the fact that we march around today with the Hakafis every day of Sukkot is a reminder of that fact. Okay, but there they actually had arovas that they would tie to the mizbeach, and then they would go around with the lulav and the esrog. The question is only whether the arovas was a separate procession carried on after they already gone around with the lulav and the esrog, or was it, something that was first put on the altar and then they simply marched around. So the order is a question, in the Gemara and Sukkah, what exactly was the procedure. But that it should be done in the Beis HaMikdash, this is Halacha L'Moshe Mesinai. Okay. And the last thing is Nisuch HaMayim. This too, he says, this is Halacha L'Moshe Mesinai. It was ordained that all 7 days of Sukkot, this should be it, and that's it, period. So you don't ask any questions. Right. All right. Now the Mishnah, if you remember, continued that Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Yeshua, that Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rabbi Yeshua, that the Ovel of Ne'ateva, the person who davens for the Yomit, the Yom Tov Achron Shalchag on Shmini Atzeres, so Achron Maskir, the one who davens Musaf, we learned, mentions Moshe for Ruach, Horishon Ina Maskir, but the first one, in other words, the Baal Shachris, doesn't mention Moshe for Ruach. The Yom Tov Horishon Shal Pesach, and on the first day of Pesach, Horishon Maskir, and the Baal Shachris still says, Mashiv HaRuach, but HaAchron Eino Maskir. The Baal Musaf no longer mentions Mashiv HaRuach. And of course, this is our practice to this day. So now, the question is, Hi Rabbi Yehoshua, which Rabbi Yehoshua are we talking about? Ilema Rabbi Yehoshua de Masnissim, if we say that it's the Rabbi Yehoshua of the Mishnah itself, the Mishnah says specifically that on the eighth day of Yontif, in other words, meaning what? Shmini Atzeres, that's when he mentions El Rabbi Yeshua the Baraisa, but Rabbi Yeshua in the Baraisa, not in the Mishnah. So Omar, he said something different. He says Bishas Hanochaso, right? He said that you begin saying it at the time when you put down the lulav in the Esrei, right? Bisu, furthermore, Ha the Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Ben Beseira. Furthermore, it says that Rabbi Yehuda says the name of Ben Beseira, Ha Over Lepnei Hateva Biyom Tov Rachron, that the person who davens on the, you know, the chazan on the last day of Yontiv on Shmini Atzeres, Achro in Maskir, right? Then the Baal Musav is the one who mentions it. So they say, "Hi, Ben Beseira. How could this be Ben Beseira, the same as what Rabbi Yeshua Ben Beseira? Ilema Rabbi Yehuda Ben Beseira. If we say that it's the same as Rabbi Yehuda Ben Beseira." Didn't he say that when do we begin saying Mashu'ah? On the second day Yontif. So, there's, again, that's also, it's a, that doesn't jive, right? So, Omer Rab Nachman by Yitzchak. So, Rabbi Nachman says, hey, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. You know, he says, my suggestion is that we're talking here not about Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, but we're talking about Rabbi Yehoshua ben Beseira. And maybe the Yehoshua who's mentioned before is not the ordinary Rabbi Yehoshua, but this is a different Yehoshua by the name of Yehoshua ben Beseira. Zimnin, the Kori Levi Shmei, sometimes they called him by his full name, in other words, Yehoshua ben Beseira. The Zimnin, the Kori Levi Shmei Abba. And at other times, they called him simply by the name of his father. They simply said, Ben Beseira says. Okay? The Hom, it comes to this Bechu, the Hom, the Vosel Nisbechu. One would be before they gave him smicha, in other words, then they would call him simply Ben Beseira, right? But after they gave him smicha, so, you know, they upgraded him to calling him Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehoshua Ben Beseira. Okay, so God's fine. So that resolves the fact that we're talking about two different people, and therefore it's perfectly all right. Naturally, what is the halacha? Halacha still follows what we had in the Mishnah, namely that we begin saying it on Shmini Atzeres, but only when? Only Kibbutzah. Right. Only when the Chazan starts in Davening Musa. As I told you, that's also it's a contrast between the practice that we find in our Machzorim as compared to the Swadic practice, or the practice in Eretz Yisrael, where they say Mashav HaRuach to Musaf even in the silent prayer, which we don't do. Okay? Why do they do it? Because in Eretz Yisrael, the custom has evolved that the special prayers are recited prior to Musaf rather than to wait for Musaf itself. We do it during the first two brachas. We say it. If you remember, you know, Chazan says, you know, and then, you know, he says, Shmini Atzeres, he says, Zechor, remember this one, and then, you know, Bavural, Timna, Mayim, right, or you know, the Sitkosam, Chain, Chon, Chashras Mayim, in other words, you know, every paragraph there ends with a prayer for rain, and then the Chazan says, Shatu Hashem Lekeinu, because thou art the Lord our God, Mashav Ruach, the Merit HaGoshem. So that's the official start, okay, for us. But since they do it already, they've already said these prayers for rain prior to Musaf, so that's why in Musaf, even in the silent prayer, they have to mention Mashav Ruach, and of course it means that there, then the custom is that when the Chazan repeats Mashav, when he repeats Shemin Esra, he does not say those special prayers that we recite.
He doesn't say.
He simply says, "All right, like he would do on any Shabbos or Yontov, and you know, just say Mashav Ruach Min HaGoshem, you know, Mechal Kilchayim."
So they don't say that at all, that prayer.
No. They do say the other thing, but they don't say what we have for the first two brachas for the Ovis and the Gevuros. Okay, now we go to another Indian over here. Tana, we have a tradition which says, "Batal of Aruchais Lochiyav Chalam Lahatzkir." Our sages did not require us to make any special mention in the Shmona Esrei, either of dew or of winds. V'yim bo lahatzkir, if he happens to mention them. Masker, all right, so we can mention it, but there's no chiyav, as we would say, there's no obligation to mention it. my tama, what is the reason that there is no obligation to mention, you know, Masha Baruach, which would be the Ruchos, and Morin Hatal, that God causes the dew to fall, right? Why don't we? So, Omer Rabbi Chanina says, he says, because these things are not withheld. They're there all the time. At any time of the year, he could have wind, at any time of the year, he could have
dew.
Dew, not rain. Dew. Okay. So they say, how do we know that dew is not withheld? So they bring a quotation from Eliyahu Hanavi. Okay? Vayomer Eliyahu Atishbi Mitoshvei Gilod. Eliyahu the Tishbite, who was one of the inhabitants of Gilod. Gilod, if you remember, that's on the other side of the Jordan River. It's, you know, where the area around where we had the Golan Heights today. So this is where he came from. Okay? All that was good Jewish territory.
Hamat Gadar, you can. Hamat starts there.
Yeah, Gilod. Yeah. Right. Right, that's the northern part, you know, above Lake Kinneret and so on. That would be Gilad, okay? And, you know, today they gave it the name the Golan because it's also, I mean, it's one of the names that we find in the Torah, in the Bible, okay, about Golan. So at any rate, Gilad is Eber HaYardin, okay? It's Eber HaYardin. He lived over there. So he said, El Achav, he said to King Ahab, he said, Chai Hashem Elokei Yisrael, as God, the God of Israel, lives, Asher Amadati Lefanov, before whom I have stood this day, Im Yeh HaShanim Ha'ele Talamota, that there will not be, during these years, either Tal, Dew, Umotor, or Rain. Right? So, he's threatening Achav what? That there will not be either Dew,
or rain,
during these years of famine that the Bnei Shalom is bringing upon King Ahab and the people of Israel, because they have sinned by doing what?
They slaughtered all the prophets. So
yes, and also, of course, you know, they worshipped Baal and Ashtoreth and so on. Right, okay. Kiyim lefi devorei. It will only come to pass, in other words, that there will be dew and rain according to my word, as I commanded. Uchsiv, and then we find another pasuk a little bit later on, the same general area, that the Rebbeinu Shalem says, Leich heroe al Achav, go and appear before Ahab, v'yet no motor al panei adomo, and I will give rain upon the face of the earth. The Yilu Tal lo komale, but he didn't mention over here now that he's going to give dew. So obviously then the dew was not withheld during these 3 years, right? So they say, my Tama, what is the reason that dew is not mentioned over here? It says, Mishum, the law may utter, because it was not withheld, even in those years. So the Gemara says, V'chim yachad ole miotzer. Well, if that's the case, that dew was not being withheld, in Eliyahu, Ishtabui, Lomalei, Hochi. Why did Eliyahu give such an oath before Achav that there's not going to be either rain or dew? So Kohomale, this is what he said to him, Afilu tal devrocha namale yase, even dew which brings blessing will not come. In other words, yes, dew will not be withheld, but what kind of dew? Dew that doesn't do any good, but dew that is helpful to the plants, helpful to vegetation, this will be withheld. This is the dew of blessing. How? I'll tell you, if the dew vanishes immediately in the morning, right, and so it's not there, right. What you need is a good soaking. And boy, I've been in Eretz Yisrael, let's say, in July, August, and you see that the dew is there, that's thick, you know. It begins to fall towards nightfall, you know, when the temperature drops about 10, 15 degrees. And in the morning, it's still there until the sun has risen a certain number of hours, then the dew vanishes. But in the meantime, it has helped to preserve the plant life. So it's a great blessing. This is why, incidentally, even though we are not under any chiyuv, under any obligation to mention Morid Hatal during the summertime, but nevertheless, in Eretz Yisrael, the practice is that even the Ashkenazim if they're in Eretz Yisrael, they mention Morid Hatal in the Shmoneh Esrei. Because the Sfardim, they always mention Morid Hatal. You know, beginning with the first, with the Musaf of the first day of Pesach, right through Shachris of Shmini Atzeres, that they mention Morid Hatal. We don't. In Asidurim, you're not going to find Morid Hatal. But pick up either a Siddur which is printed in Israel, even if it's Nusach Ashkenaz, or certainly, you know, any of the Nusach Sfarad Siddurim, or the Hasidish Siddurim, and so on, and you'll find that Morid Hatal is recited. Okay? So, yes.
What is the word for thick? Because they use the word thick to...
Thick?
Yeah.
Ave. Ave is thick. Okay. But we'll also see that the word has another meaning. Ave also means a cloud. It's another meaning of the word, as we'll see. Okay? Alright, let's continue a little bit more. Alright, so... Bili Hadre, Letal de Brocho. So, the Gemara now asks the following question. When Eliyahu was able to restore the rain, you know, at the end of the period, as we read the quotation at the bottom of the previous page, why then doesn't he mention Tal? That Tal would be, and there would be a reference to Tal de Brocha, right? So that now once rain comes, so also the Tal, the dew which brings blessing, should also be returned. So he says, Mishum de la Minkra Milsa, because you cannot recognize when is dew, which is a dew of Brocha, and which is dew, which is not of Brocha. And since there was no way to recognize, because dew continued to fall, so that's the reason why Elio didn't mention it this time. Okay. Now, Ruchais Benalon Lom Yasser. Now, how do we know that the winds are not withheld, that winds can blow at different times of the year? So, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, or Rabbi Shimon ben Levi says, the Omar Kroth. Pasuk says, it's the Pasuk in the prophet Zechariah, says, Ki ka'arba Ruchais Hashemayim perasti estem yom Hashem. God says that I have scattered you even as I have scattered like the four winds of the heavens. Of course, you have to understand, Ruchas HaShemayim means there's a north wind, there's a south wind, an east wind, and a west wind, right? So that today, when we use about, you know, Arba Ruchos, we take it not in its literal meaning of the winds, but we take it in the sense of the four directions. Mizrach, Maariv, Tzof, and Dorav. Okay? But literally, the prophet says that I have scattered you, the people of Israel, even like the four winds of the heavens. So they say, Maika Amaluhu, what did he mean when he said that to the people of Israel? Ilemo, if we say, Hochika Amaluhu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Israel, maybe the Rabbeinu Shalom said as follows to Israel, Divadartinchu Bi'aba Ruchi Di Almo, I have scattered you to the four corners of the world. So Yehochi, then if that's the case, Ke'arba, why does it say Ke'arba, like the four? Be'arba Miboyle, you understand?
Yeah.
You know, Ke means like, and Be means
in,
or into, or something like that, okay? So if what the implication of the prophet is, that the Rebbeinu Shlom is telling, you know, the people of Israel, he's scattering them into the four corners of the earth, into the four, you know, everywhere, all over the world, so then it was said, but why did it say ku? So the answer is, like the winds, like the four winds. So what about these four winds? Elohi Kamar. So this is rather what he means. Kishem sheyef shalo yoylam b'lev ruchais. Just as it is impossible for the world to exist without wind, there's always wind, in other words, blowing, in order to better the world, right? So kach yef shalo yoylam b'lev Yisrael. Likewise, the world cannot exist without the people of Israel. Very nice prophet.
That's beautiful.
Amar Rav Chanina. So Rav Chanina said, Hilkach, if that's the case, then the Imos HaChama, if during the summer months, Imos HaChama literally means the months when the sun is at its hottest. Okay? You know, the word Chama means sun, but it also means hot.
That's where the word comes in, something.
Yeah. Actually, it's not the Khamsin is an Arabic word which is like Khamishim in Hebrew. In other words, suppose the last 50 days during the course of the year. That's where they, how they got the word Khamsin. Yeah. It's Arabic for 50.
So it doesn't last that long?
No, but it's possible. Thank God it doesn't last for 50 days. But when it happens, it's very uncomfortable.
It's the hot wind.
Right, it's the hot wind that blows.
Yeah, like the Santana.
Exactly. It's like the Santana down in California.
And also they blow sand around too?
Yes. It's been coming in like from Africa and from Egypt, from that area over there. That's why the reason, that they have this heat and sand and so on coming in from from the desert areas. Okay, so what he's saying over here is that in Yemos HaChama, in the summer days, Omar Mashiv HaRuach, if a person would say Mashiv HaRuach, just that phrase, right, he causes the wind to blow, Ein Masir Naso, then you don't have to make him go back to the beginning of Shemoneh Esrei or the beginning of the paragraph or something like that. In other words, you don't interrupt him when he's davening for the yomim, okay, or privately, as far as that's concerned. But Omar Morid Hageshem, but if he said Morid Hageshem, that causes the rain to fall, then Masir Naso, then they cause him to go back again. Of course, you're not supposed to say that in the wrong time of the year. If during the rainy season, lo amar mashiv ruach, if he didn't say the words mashiv ruach, they ain't masir no so, then they did not have him, repeat. Lo amar morid hageshem, but what if he forgot to say morid hageshem, those two words, then masir no so, then they have him repeat to the Shemoneh Esrei. But lo, not only that, elo. If he said he causes the wind to pass away and the dew to fly away, in other words, the dew to evaporate, they do not cause him to repeat the Shemoneh Esrei. Now, I can only assume, first of all, none of us say these things anymore, okay? But there may have been people, who said once upon a time, in the Shemoneh Esrei, they said the same thing. But I can understand, let's say during the summertime, let's say, if he said these, that, they don't, it has no particular relevance, however, at the other time of the year, that the causes the dew to evaporate. On the contrary, what do we say? We say talamata, the same phrase that Eliyahu HaNavi said, this is what we say, once we get serious about asking for rain, okay? When we say it in Baruch Aleinu. So, this last phrase, nobody, we just don't do it, period.